Hello, I'm Bruce Celery. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple. I was literally on the phone with my internet provider yesterday to prepare for today's show because we're going to talk about how to get the best plan for these services at the lowest price. And so that was my pre-work, making the call myself. Nadir Marcos founded an internet plan comparison site called PlanHub that allows you to compare different internet, TV, cell phone plans. And he's going to be here to tell us how it works and also answer some of my very skeptical questions. Then money and the single person. It's just different when you're solo. Easier, harder, different, for sure different. We're going to talk about all that with Julie Shipley Strickland. She is the co-author of a book called The Canadian's Guide to Personal Finance for Singles. And if you're on TikTok and you've been scrolling along recently, you may have come across some personal finance content. It is a very big topic on TikTok these days. And we're going to talk to one of the content creators. His name is Sam Lichtman. He is a certified financial planner. He shares his videos at Millennial Money Canada. And he's going to talk about, what's on there, why more young people are turning to social media and TikTok in particular to learn more about money. Plus, yes, no, maybe, how your mental health can impact your financial decision-making. Zandiel Chuanza is a personal finance journalist and financial wellness educator. She's here to talk more about that. This is Moolala, Money Made Simple, brought to you in part by Credit Canada, the first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. Let's get started. I can play the game, but I am not great at the game. And I don't like the game. The game being getting the best price on internet and cell phone services. When it comes to all these plans, there are relatively few providers, but plenty of plans, like a bazillion plans. How do you know which is the one that is best for you? How do you know what's available these days? Nadir Marcos is the CEO of PlanHub, which is an internet plan comparison site to help you choose not just internet, but cell phone and TV plans in Canada. He is here to tell us about how that works and how to get the best deal for your bucks. He is in Montreal, Quebec. Hello there.
Hello, Bruce. Thanks for having me.
There are so many of these comparison websites out there. So mortgages, credit cards, insurance, almost every category you can think of. Why did you decide to start PlanHub?
Well, I had the personal need. I mean, I used to call my provider. And, back then, I don't know if you remember that, Bruce, but back then you had these 10 numbers that is unlimited and the rest is like 100 minutes per month. And I would ask my carrier, what are the 20 numbers I should pick or the 10 numbers I should pick? And he wasn't able to tell me, but even though he had the data, right? So I said, okay, there's a need there. The plans are complex to understand. They're easier now than before, but they are complex to understand. And it's hard to compare apples with apples. And so that's how it started. It really really started as an Expedia-like site and still under that format today.
So you put in your plans. I understand PlanHub is not available every single place in the country because plans are different depending on where you live. But you put in your postal code, you answer some questions about your needs, and then what will you see? What gets served up?
So we will. For internet, since I guess you're talking about internet mostly. What is complex for internet is to know what is available where and at what speed. I mean, Canada is such a big country that's really the complexity and it's hard to for the carriers to cover all the rural areas and so on. So it's postal code based, which is not perfect. I mean, but it's still better than nothing. And essentially we'll list all the providers that match your needs, the needs that you have expressed and that are available in your postal code.
Now I put in my postal code and it listed all companies I have never heard of.
Yes.
That's kind of a deal breaker for me. I can't be the only one. How would you address a consumer concern about signing up with a player you've never heard of?
That's a very good question, Bruce. And that's why we've collected over the years 15,000 reviews. There's a lot of small internet carriers out there that are, fighting for attention. It's hard to beat the big guys. But that's one of the goals of PlanHub is to put them equal to equal with other players. And so, yeah, we've collected a lot of reviews, and the reviews are there, and they're there to help the user pick the good ones from the not so good ones. And they are not all equivalent, for sure.
How do I know that you have even included the major providers, given that they aren't listed? Because I got to tell you, I looked at the list and I was like, wait a sec, did they even check out Bell and Rogers and Shaw and Telus and the ones that have the biggest brand recognition?
We have. As I said, the complexity is to know what is available where. So it really depends on your postal code. That's what makes the tool so useful, is that it really depends on your postal code. And I mean, it's not perfect. I guess if you're asking the question, perhaps you're in a rural area. Is that the case?
Downtown Toronto.
Are you
downtown
really?
Toronto? Yep.
Oh boy. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So let me ask another thing that really struck me as odd is the players that were served up on that first page all required a lump sum payment for 2 years instead of monthly. And unlike my marriage, I am a big believer in no commitment. I don't like making a commitment to any of the telecom providers. Why would they serve up deals like that? Is that with these other providers that I haven't heard of? Is that normally how they work?
They used to work like that, but actually what you saw is a calculation that we do over 2 years. As I said, we wanted to compare apples with apples. So there's three prices in the result card that we show, for example, for Rogers or whatnot. You have the monthly price, of course, you have the upfront payment, and then you have the 2 years. The 2 years really includes everything that you have to pay over the course of 2 years.
I see, but I don't have to pay it all at once.
No. This is total. So just to compare based on price, we wanted to compare. You know, it's hard to compare when the first one says six first months are $20 yeah. off, and then you have the modem and so on. So we really wanted to put everything on the 2 year price. And this comes from the cell phone, because on the cell phone, everything is calculated on 2 years. You know, the price of the day, the contract is 2 years length. So right. we really use this model.
There, I'm sure, are plans that are publicly available, but my sense is, and this is talking to industry insiders over the years, there are plans that aren't advertised. They are granted to VIPs, they are granted to major complainers, they are granted to people for a whole bunch of reasons. How do you get access to the plans that the providers don't advertise?
Well, Bruce, with some of the carriers, we have exclusive deals. These hidden deals are there on the site, but they're mostly on our alert feature. We have an alert feature, and you know, the prices are very dynamic, much more dynamic than people know. And so on that price alert, we do have exclusive deals at a precise time and for people that, you know, and really tailored to what the user is looking for. So, yeah.
There is a big advantage, or at least I should say a big perceived advantage, because I don't know the facts on this, but there's a big perceived advantage that if you combine internet and mobility, you are going to save a chunk of money. How come your site doesn't do that?
It's a question of time. Of course, we absolutely need to work on that, and we are working on that, on bundling. And unfortunately for now, we only compare the two in silos, but it's definitely in the pipeline, and actually it's being worked on. Yeah, that's the next step really for us.
These comparison websites as a category typically make their money in the same way, which is that some of the companies that are on their platform will grant them an affiliate fee. Is that how PlanHub makes its money?
Yes, for now it's the model. But it doesn't change really how we show the prices. We show you'll notice that we show some carriers that don't have a view more button, and this really is how we get paid. And they're still on the site, so we try to be as impartial as possible, and that is our mission. Yeah.
So there is the site, and we've spent most of our time talking about PlanHub itself. What are other strategies that Canadians should be aware of to save on their internet and mobility plans?
I think that that a very large part of the saving will come probably from assessing, doing a good assessment of it, of the customer need. So what do you really need for internet speed? You know, the companies, they want to sell you the biggest speed as they can, because it's basically their business model, right? They sell, you know, they rather have you, Bruce, buy one gigabit connection and use only 50 megabits per second, 50 megabits, and so that they can sell, you know, that 950 megabits to other Bruces that buy also one gigabit. And so it's kind of a Buffett like business model. So if you and we have a questionnaire on the site that helps you define your needs, but as an example, I mean, for Netflix, you don't need more than 5 megabits per second, and that can be surprising. And if you want 4K requires 30 megabits per second, but it's much less than what you know companies are trying to sell us. So assessing the needs are number one. Second opportunity to save is timing. Companies, they're public companies, they have quarters, they have objectives, and they are key moments in the year where the prices are lower. And that was a bit of the goal of our alert feature, is to, you know, just have a line in the water, and once a deal becomes available and becomes relevant for you, we'll send it to you. And that was the goal. Third option is, of course, to negotiate. Call and negotiate. And the best way, I believe, to do that is to have a comparable, and maybe PlanHub can help you with that, but call and negotiate.
One last question before we go here. How often should a consumer look at this bill? Is it once every month? Is it every 6 months? It certainly is more than once every 2 years, because I know from experience that prices really do go down if you wait that long.
Yeah, it's a good question. I'd say once every six months.
And once every 6 months.
Yes. And probably, I mean, the truth is there's key moments where you should look. And you know, moving season, like you know, there's of course back to school, Black Friday, Boxing Day, all those. March break also has interesting deals. So there's key moments in the year where the prices are much more attractive.
Really interesting stuff. Nadir, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure, Bruce.
Nadir Marcos is the CEO of PlanHub. Check it out. There's some really interesting insight here. You'll have to get over the hurdles that I talked about, that I had to, you know, sort through in terms of new providers that I've never heard of. But some great tips from Nadir there on how to score the best deals. Stay with us. Coming up next on Moolala, I will speak to Julie Shipley Strickland about her book, The Canadian's Guide to Personal Finance for Singles. And later, how your mental health can impact your financial decision-making. Personal finance journalist and financial wellness educator Zendil Chuan here. If you have missed an episode of Moolala, you can head over to moolala.ca and listen to episodes there, either by name, by guest name, or by topic, or you can actually listen to the entire episode. Hooray for that. You can also go to any of the the podcast platforms, Spotify, Stitcher, Amazon Prime, Apple Music, wherever you get podcasts, and download the show while you're there.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple, with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Welcome back. Moolala, Money Made Simple is brought to you in part by Credit Canada. I am the CEO of the organization, and we are Canada's longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency. Our mission is to help people get out of debt so they can get back into life. Listen, debt is a brutal reality for millions of Canadians. It starts to pile on for lots and lots of different reasons: job loss, divorce, illness, bad luck, you name it. Our accredited credit counselors are available to help you understand your current financial situation and take you through all your options on how to move forward. And there really are options out there. So go to creditcanada.com. We are nonprofit, as I said. The counseling is free and judgment free. The population of single Canadians is growing pretty fast, and there are lots of similarities to life as a single, lots of differences too, many differences when it comes to getting a handle on your money. If you're single, you don't have that partner to provide input when it comes to managing your finances. You also don't have to ask for permission or a big conversation if there's something that you want to splurge on. But we're going to get into this topic of money and singles with the author of a new book. Julie Shipley Strickland is a senior investment advisor at Wellington Altus. She is the co-author of The Canadian's Guide to Personal Finance for Singles. She is based in Calgary, Alberta. Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. Now, when you use this word single, it can refer to a lot of different life circumstances. How do you think about it in the context of the book?
Yeah. So when we were thinking about it for the context of the book, we really looked at three kind of broad categories. So one was divorced, two was bereaved, and then three was this category called chosen single. And so those are the three we really focused on and kind of had in the back of our minds when Brian and I were writing this book.
Now, in our pre-conversation, you told me you're actually married, happily married. Why did you decide?
So is Brian.
So is Brian, your co-author. Why did you decide to write a book with this particular focus?
You know, it's a growing segment of the population, just like you said, but there are many resources really targeted towards different ideas and different planning tips and tricks, information for this segment of the population to get the support they need. So that was one of the biggest reasons why, you know, we decided to target it.
What are some examples? If we were eavesdropping on the thoughts that single person has or the conversations they have with themselves, what would be some things that they would be dealing with, complaining about, challenged by?
Yeah, and great question. I think first and foremost, you targeted one very good point, is that they don't have to have any discussions, but they also don't get to have any discussions with a partner or someone to bounce ideas off of. So I think that's one area when, you know, you think about this segment of the market, that's an area where I think a lot of them struggle, for sure. It's hard, right? You're always in your own mind when you're making these decisions. Sure, you can bounce them off friends, colleagues, maybe some family, that sort of thing, but it's a different scenario. On the flip side, if you want to do something, whatever you want to do, it's your own decision. So I think that dynamic and how that plays out in someone's mind and in their decision-making process was definitely at the forefront when we were writing this book. The last one I wanted to touch on is always any sort of planning down the road. So any sort of tax planning, any sort of, you know, anything to do with planning for retirement, that sort of thing. It's very reliant on themselves. So I think we touch on that in different areas of the book because that seemed to be a big concern that we kept hearing about too.
I'm glad you put it into three separate categories of singles because I can imagine the challenges are quite different for someone who's chosen to be single. They may have, that may be their entire life. They're in that circumstance. Yes. For someone who's bereaved, they could have been married for decades and then be surprised to be in this circumstance. And for someone who's gone through a divorce, there's just a whole bunch of other financial and emotional complications. I want to ask you about that first category of the chosen single.
Yeah.
Did you put that out to those readers to say, what are we missing here? Did we accurately capture what you're really dealing with?
Yeah, that's really interesting. I don't think we polled anyone specifically. We did a lot of research. We did a lot of, asking in our own networks and that sort of thing. I wouldn't say we, you know, polled any reader in our book or anything like that. I think what it was a lot of the research came in, had already all the evidence there of what this segment was kind of going through and where they needed support. And so that was one of the big areas because it's actually one of the most rapidly growing segments of the population is people who have chosen to either identify as single and or reside as single and or that sort of thing. They're making their own independent financial decisions. That was kind of the definition we went by when we were thinking this through.
I was talking to a single person and she said, listen, I have finally had this insight, and she was in her mid-30s, that I have no one to rely on. If I don't figure this out, no one is going to take care of it for me.
Exactly. And on one hand, like you expressed, there's a freedom with that. I get to do what I'd like to do. That's fantastic. But on the other hand, there is no one to fall back on or to rely on. So it's imperative that they have the resources, the support, the network to be able to get the information they need and to be able to make educated decisions.
What are some of the nuances that you would need to apply as an investment advisor looking at some of the retirement calculations? I mean, I guess some of it's just the math. The math is the math is the math. But yeah, there isn't that backstop or security of another person who could step up if there was an income shortfall or something.
Yeah, I think there's a few areas I touch on when I'm planning for someone that's chosen single or someone perhaps that is now divorced and or bereaved. You know, these three, really, they're relying on themselves going into retirement or in retirement. And so one, we definitely lean into a bit more cash. So we have a bit more, and I don't mean necessarily cash deposits. I mean just liquid money that they can get access to, because you don't have that second person's pension or RIF or anything like that to be able to lean on. We need to have a bit more liquid assets available. So that's one area. Mm-hmm. Two, you know, some of my clients really like the idea of having, you know, some insurance in place. So insurance where there's some cash value, and that cash value is there. You know, we affectionately say if they live too long, you know, if they're running out of their traditional retirement assets, you know, they're 90, 95, 100, that sort of thing, they have this next access of a pool of cash to be able to rely on and live off of. And if they don't need that, the death benefit when they do pass on goes to family and friends and that sort of thing. So some of my single clients really, really appreciate that, because they've got kind of, you know, something if they're alive, and then something that passes nicely, you know, to family and loved ones if they should pass or when they pass, right? So that seems to be kind of two areas that my singles really lean into. Yeah.
You are a female, your co-author is a male. How did you factor in gender? Because I can imagine on the chosen single part, there are some real differences there.
Yeah, that's a great question. I love that. I think for me, and I can only speak for me on this, although I want to attempt to, because Brian's so open and just lovely. For me, it was really, you know, the statistics are showing that one, women outlive men. So you would have more traditionally in the bereaved category that say maybe have been widowed and lost their spouse. And then, you know, because women are living longer, you may have more planning on the female side. So Brian and I discussed that. We really leaned into some of my knowledge and some of my experience there. And some of how I do tend to work with a lot of females, being female myself. And so I could really bring up real life concerns and experiences that I had had and are currently having with some of my clientele. So that was definitely one area. And then I think Brian balanced that out well, you know, when I would say, okay, well, as a female, this is, you know, this is what I'm thinking, this is what I would lean into. He's like, okay, this is the male perspective that I'd like to show. So we really, you know, played off each other well. And I think there were, you know, look, Brian's become a great friend. He's absolutely wonderful. So I think we were able to play off each other's experiences, knowledge, and it worked really, really well. I think we were able to capture both sides.
You reference a chosen single. That chosen single may have kids. That chosen single may not have a kid. Let's look at that subgroup that doesn't. My mom has five kids. We're all around. We've all got tasks. We all engage with her in a very, very active way. I am coupled, but I only have one kid. So I can imagine that phase is different. How do you factor in the financial consequence for a chosen single who doesn't have a kid in terms of what care will look like? Because in all likelihood, they're going to have to pay out of pocket on the things that if you happen to have five kids, you don't have to pay for.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think when we were looking at that area, you know, we were really looking at building up that reserve. What trusted friends, colleagues, siblings, even family members that, you know, I've got one client I'm thinking of, she's very close with her cousin who's about 5 years younger than her. So in her will and powers of attorney and that sort of thing, that cousin is going to speak for her. So, you know, there's other family relations or good friends, that sort of thing, that can support that area for sure. And then I think it's just about really, you know, for them, it's very important to have their wishes outlined, because there might be no one else that they've actually spoken to this about that can, you know, weigh in and give an opinion. Yeah. So that's definitely one area for sure. And then if we flip the other way, you know, when they pass away, who are they going to leave their funds and their estate and that sort of thing to? You know, some of my clients really like the idea of supporting charities. And so there's a lot of charitable giving that's being set up, something they're passionate about, something they had the opportunity to volunteer in. children while they were alive, that sort of thing that they're really excited about. And so in terms of passing wealth on, I'm seeing a lot of exposure to charitable, you know, causes, and that, which is fantastic. And then often there's some compensation for a family or friend member that's going to be supporting them through that, through the journey of passing and that sort of thing.
You write about unconventional housing arrangements, and I love that. I mean, we talk about this on the show. It's particularly relevant for people who are single because they don't have the inherent support of a partner. Tell us a bit about what you learned on that front and where we are headed, because I think there's a lot of work to be done in this country over the course of the next 20 or 30 or 40 years when I'm going to need a place to live that isn't where I currently live.
You know, there was a few ideas we came up with and that we researched and saw, but I think the most interesting was, you know, we had different words for it, but the description of it, I think, is the most articulate. Large home, several bedrooms in it, adjoining bathrooms renovated for that. And the people who are living in that home all either own it jointly or have some sort of arrangement of ownership over kind of their room. And then they share common space. And so, you know, an idea of a group home, but really for, let's say no one that's elderly or that sort of thing. They're active, they want to live, but they want that camaraderie, they want that community, and they don't want all the responsibilities of a home on one person, right? So if there's five of them living in the home, maybe one is handling some of the cleaning, maybe one's handling some outdoor work, maybe one handles laundry, whatever their arrangement is. That one blew us away, I think, the most, because one, there's several being set up in different cities in Canada. So that was fascinating to us. And two, the report and the reactions to it were so positive and favorable. Mm-hmm. The instant community was probably the most talked about in our research that we found that we really loved. So yeah, I thought that was a very cool idea, something I hadn't thought of. It's like university all over again.
Yeah, yeah, minus the keg, or maybe including the keg.
Maybe including
maybe
the keg.
The keg. Yeah, we need the keg.
It might have gone to nice bottles of wine, maybe some, we'll see, right? Yeah. There's lots of options there.
Let me ask you just one last question here. If you were to sum it all up, and I know the book's 192 pages, if you were to sum it all up into a single piece of advice for a human who is single, either always was or newly, what is the one thing that you would recommend they do or think about or prepare for when it comes to their money?
Read the book, and I'm going to put two ideas together. That's what I'm going to do on this one. Read the book and have an open mind. There's a lot of ideas that are in there that are very different and that we well researched. And I would say, like you said, at the beginning of becoming something new and how to operate. And I think it's really, really exciting.
Really interesting stuff. Julie, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you. Really appreciate it.
Julie Shipley Strickland is the co-author of The Canadian's Guide to Personal Finance for Singles.
Hi, it's me, your debt. Look, we need to talk. This isn't working. The missed payments, the collection calls, and all those sleepless nights. We need nonprofit debt counseling, and I found the perfect place. Credit Canada Debt Solutions. They're non-judgmental, 100% confidential. They'll negotiate with creditors and even stop interest. Don't you want to rebuild your credit? You deserve better.
Break up with debt. Visit creditcanada.com.
Coming up later, I'll speak to personal finance journalist and financial wellness educator Zandile Chiwanza about the impact your mental health can have on your financial decision-making. But first, navigating social media to learn more about your finances. Certified financial planner Sam Lykman talks about why people are headed to TikTok to get more information with funky soundtracks and cool graphics and dances and all those things. Hey, listen, I'm also the money columnist for CBC Radio. So every Wednesday afternoon, we dig into a topic relevant to you, to your financial life, so we could meet there too.
You're listening to Moolah Law, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
TikTok is a marvel. It's also a nightmare, but it is a marvel in terms of the kind of content, the breadth of content on literally any topic you can think of. Mental health, recipes, travel, hacks on all parts of your life, and of course, personal finance. But when you are taking your money matters into your own hands, you kind of got to pay attention to the source of the information here on social media. We're going to talk to a certified financial planner who also happens to be a pretty active TikToker. His name is Sam Lightman. He is co-founder of Achieve Wealth Management, and he TikToks under Millennial Money Canada. He joins us now from London, Ontario. Hello there, Sam.
Hi, Bruce. Thanks so much for having me.
You're in the demographic in which TikTok is, you know, something that you and your peers do. Less so for me as a Gen Xer, not that no one does, of course, but for you, it's in your generation, it's much more natural. Why did you decide to take your professional life as a CFP and bring the kind of insight that you would provide directly to clients to TikTok?
It's a great question. There's a lack of good advice out there from a public social media perspective. And so as I was on social media scrolling through and I heard people talk about misuses of RRSPs and tax-free savings accounts and misconceptions put out there, I thought, you know, I think I have a good perspective on this based on my education. And as long as I put out good content and quality content from a general information perspective rather than specific advice, I think I can really add some value to this marketplace. And yeah, it pretty much took off right from the get-go. My first video was actually around electric vehicles in Canada and electric vehicle tax credits. That was my first video as a, call it, trying to be an influencer, and it got over 100,000 views. And so that was a real turning point for me to think, oh, okay, people want to hear this stuff. Tax credits, very informative. Electric vehicles, very trendy. Let's see where we can take this. And it just turned into something I really never expected.
How do you think about topics? What do you decide to talk about?
Well, we look at what's trending and what people are interested in. So there's ways to do it, figuring out the trending feature on social media, whether it's the first home savings account. I recently posted a video that got over 1 million views explaining the first home savings account, which was tremendous because I had people that I hadn't talked to in 5 years saying, hey, my brother showed me this video and it was you, and I just wanted to reach out. And so that was really, really cool. So it's a lot of what's trending, but it's also a lot of what's important, right? We talk a lot on my TikTok about behavior around investing. We talk a lot about expectations. We talk a lot about the way that accounts are constructed and good times and bad times to use those accounts and things like general information. It's what's important and what's relevant.
How do you go about making a TikTok video as distinct from what you might put on YouTube or what you might post to Instagram or Twitter? So for example, music underscoring is a big deal on TikTok.
Yeah, that's right. And it's a little bit different when it comes to TikTok accounts, because as a business account, I'm actually limited to what type of music I get to use. So I can't use all the trendy sounds. So I really have to stick to very captivating headlines and kind of hooks. So it's a lot about capturing attention, right? Because the first 30 seconds of a TikTok video, or the first actually 5 seconds of a TikTok video, is what grabs the user's attention. And so it's about making a bold claim and then making sure that I explain in context what the actual topic of the video is. And it's a very simplified way of doing it, because on YouTube, you get people's attention for maybe 10 minutes. Here you have people's attentions for maybe 5 seconds. So if the intro is good enough, it hooks the viewer in to actually watch the whole video and understand the context of what we're talking about.
Here's an example of one of your intros that I will serve back to you and offer to our listeners. And I quote, "With the utmost humility, I think I'm a better follow than most other financial advisors." I love this bravado. Why do you think you're better?
It's a great question. For context, I put this video out there in response to Twitter users relentlessly making fun of TikTok as a medium for sharing financial advice. And so one of the reasons that I feel like I'm a good person to follow on social is because I am of the generation that I work with. So I am a millennial and I specialize in working with millennials. I'm also a business owner and specialize in working with business owners. And one of the frustrating things that I've seen was the gatekeeping of financial advice for young people. So for instance, when I went into the bank at age 19, worried about credit card debt because I had no financial literacy under my belt, they didn't provide me with any solutions. In fact, they sold me overdraft protection, and I wasn't good with money at that point in time and had no financial literacy. And so from there, it really started this really unhealthy relationship with money for me. I had no one to really understand what I was going through and to turn to actually help me understand what is good debt, what is bad debt, how to manage cash flow and all that stuff. And so for me, I actually took the initiative to get involved in the industry, and I became a bank teller and started to work my way up from there. Not everyone can do that. So my goal is to put advice out and information out that people can actually really cling on to and make their lives better and not have to turn to sales-based, product-based salespeople at the banks or other financial advisors like that.
What was your turning point? What was the moment when you said, I will get better at this?
Probably feeling sick about having my own credit card debt. Probably the moment where I woke up and thought, like, I can't sleep at night. This is causing me anxiety. I need to figure out a way out of this. And I know I'm not the only one to have felt that way. When you look at the studies, millennials are one of the most indebted generations, student loan debts, all of those things, credit cards. And so for me, that was a big turning point. I needed to figure out a way out. I knew that as my nature, I'm an impulsive person. So I had to get that under control, because we know that impulse spending is actually very inversely correlated with wealth creation. And so I realized I needed to get that under control. And so that was probably the turning point. The anxiety just drove me to really learn more about the industry and get educated.
I am a parent to a 13-year-old who loves TikTok. I read a lot about the social media platforms and the harms connected to TikTok in particular, for lots of mental health reasons. The behavioral science on TikTok makes me want to cry, because it becomes this infinite stream of content that becomes very, very difficult, especially for neurodiverse people to unhook themselves from. How do you feel about being a participant in something that for sure does some good, but also can do great harm?
I think that I take a very agnostic stance on the platform itself. My goal is to educate people in a medium where they are. My goal is to be present in those platforms. I'm also present on Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. TikTok is where we've gotten the most attention, where I've gotten the most attention and the most followers. And so for me, what that means is my videos get seen by more people on that platform. So that's where I'm going to put the most of my content. That's where I'm going to spend most of my attention, because we're getting in front of over 10 million people over the course of my posting lifetime on TikTok, which is a huge number. And a lot of people are finding a lot of value in it. A lot of people are reaching out to me saying, hey, Sam, like, the DMs I get, this is an amazing platform, an amazing channel. We're so happy. Like, we'd learned so much about financial literacy through you. All of those things, it's making a real difference for people. Mm-hmm. So I try to stay agnostic in the platform. If TikTok gets shut down tomorrow for privacy concerns, trust me, I'm going to be on the next platform posting just as frequent content and financial literacy content on whatever platforms out there.
I am about 4,000 years older than you. So I have been doing this for a really, really, really long time. If you could change one thing for your generation in terms of their financial behavior, what would it be?
Everything is so easily at our fingertips to be able to purchase with credit cards and really thoughtless purchasing. So if I could change one thing, it would be the idea that money is so easy to spend, because that really does affect how we spend our money and how much we spend. It's easier to type in a credit card number on an app than it is to pay with cash. There's science around it. It's shown that we spend more when we have a credit card, when we tap our phones, versus when we part with cash. I think that's a big thing that we all struggle with, my generation all struggles with, is just easily, just mindlessly spending money and not really knowing where it goes. So that's a big thing. But I think the one thing, Bruce, I guess overarching as I'm thinking about this overall, would be the level of debt that people start their lives in, the amount it costs to get a post-secondary education, in Canada, and it's starting to creep up more in Canada and in the US, is a huge cost. And oftentimes there's 10 to 15 year repayments on that student loans where people can't really get ahead during that time. So I think I would love to see the millennial and Gen Z generation really be able to erase student debt. I know there's a lot of controversy around how that could happen. If I could snap my fingers and make it happen with no economic consequences, trust me, that would be the one thing that I would
done.
Do.
Well, here, I'll just snap. Yeah,
there you go.
I'm just snapping right now. So maybe it's happening and we just don't have evidence yet that the snaps have been successful. Sam, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me, Bruce.
Sam Lightman is a certified financial planner. He's co-founder of Achieve Wealth Management. But our conversation today, he was here today because he has become a very active and well-followed TikToker, Millennial Money Canada. Check it out. Stay with us. Coming up on Moolala, what to do if your mental health is affecting your financial decision-making. Personal finance journalist and financial wellness educator Zandile Chuanza is here to share some insight and some tips. To stay up to date on all things Moolala, simple to do, we've got our newsletter. It comes out once a month. You sign up at moolala.ca and you'll get info on what's going on CBC Radio and CityLine and CNN Bloomberg and other stuff where I hang my hat sometimes.
You're listening to Moolala, Money Made Simple with Bruce Ellery on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Mental health and money. We have talked about this very broad topic in a number of ways and from a number of perspectives over the course of the last couple of years. It is hugely relevant, whether you are talking about spending or saving or debt management or investing or insurance or staying organized. I mean, it really is relevant everywhere. Today, we're going to focus on one specific aspect as it relates to financial decision making, because there are a lot of decisions, some very big ones, like, am I going to buy a house? And some very small ones. Should I buy that coffee or should I not buy that coffee? Our guest is Zandile Chuanza. She is a personal finance journalist and financial wellness educator. And she's going to help us understand more about this connection between mental health and financial decision-making specifically. Hello and welcome.
Thank you for having me back, Bruce.
What is the connection here in terms of mental health and financial decision-making?
Right. So mental health conditions affect people differently, but there's definitely certain factors that we can all keep in mind when we're making decisions in our day-to-day. So whether it's depression, anxiety, impulsivity, ADHD, really a lot of common mental health conditions will impact how you manage and spend your money. So if you are having an episode of depression, it can be difficult to problem solve. You might not feel very motivated. You might find it hard to focus on tasks that usually might be easier for somebody else. And this can really make managing money more challenging. So when it comes to managing your money, you might also have trouble staying organized if you have symptoms of ADHD, for example, and have difficulty focusing on tasks, like I said, that most people might take for granted, such as making a call to a lender to negotiate a lower interest rate. Someone with anxiety might find that very overwhelming. Mm.
And, you know, for any of us, whether we're dealing with a mental health issue or not, we certainly can face decision fatigue. And the most tangible example I can think of is going grocery shopping at the end of a long day and knowing you need, shampoo, and you walk down that aisle and there are 14,000 different options there and you just want a bottle of shampoo, but you just don't have anything left in the tank in order to make those kinds of decisions effectively. That reality times 100 if you're dealing with some of the root causes that you mentioned.
Right. Because when our mental health declines or when we're facing financial difficulty, it's really difficult to feel like there's no way out of that situation. So you could actually end up leaving the grocery store without that shampoo in that case. Mm. So when it comes to dealing with hopelessness or overwhelm, it's better to make some lists or to maybe outsource that task if you're able to, just so you're not adding to the stress that's already there.
What have, so as a personal finance journalist, you have covered this topic. What resonates for you in terms of your own experience?
Right. So I have definitely had faced challenges with my anxiety over the course of the pandemic. I know a lot of people have had increased issues with their mental health, but for me, it was definitely anxiety. And I felt like there was simple money-related tasks that were just so complicated for me during that time. So usually I would be the person that's paying my bills on time and in full and in control of my situation. But I found myself missing a lot of deadlines, overpaying for certain things when I didn't need to, and also just avoidance. Avoidance is a huge problem in personal finance, because when we enter a dangerous situation, it's either we have that fight or flight response. It can be triggered very easily with personal finance. So if you have a perceived threat to your personal finance, and especially in my case, it just meant that I was avoiding it for as long as I could. And that definitely led to me having a little spike in overusing my credit card and having debt rather than tackling the situation that was at hand.
What are some of the things that people can do to, this is an and or question, improve the quality of the decisions that they make, given whatever else they're dealing with on a mental health front, and or reduce the decision-making burden for themselves?
Right. When dealing with multiple financial decisions at once, sometimes it's more likely to have a knee-jerk reaction. So instead of focusing, I would say it's better to focus on one financial decision at a time. So right now, a lot of people might be more worried about whether they have enough for a down payment for a house. But how about your day-to-day finances? Like, what is going on with your actual budget, right? So many people with mental health and money difficulties find it helps to actually involve either like their family members, partners, even friends in conversations about financial problems, because talking about it really helps you spot your patterns in your behavior and you feel more in control of your finances and more confident. So I'd really suggest that people feel more comfortable and find just one person at first that you trust, that you're able to have a conversation with about the challenges you're facing, and involve them in your plan. So for me, I do have a friend that when I feel like I'm about to overspend on something that I don't need, but I want to buy something to make myself feel better, I'll give her a call and she will sort of snap me back to reality.
What are you thinking? Don't do it.
She will basically knows how to bring me back to a safe space to be able to know that I don't need that thing. It's just me trying to manage my emotions at that time. And I'll say also just that's what I call the right support. It's so important to have that. And we can definitely improve our financial situation by just those actions. And I think also seeking treatment as well. If you're able to talk to a therapist, maybe use some of your benefits from work. There are actually financial therapists out there now. So I suggest we all get on our Googles and look up financial therapists or coaches that deal with money and mental health. There are coaches that deal with people who have ADHD, coaches that deal with people who are living with depression and anxiety. So I think even setting up direct debits is another one. Not necessarily just, I know we talk about automating finances all the time when it comes to investing, but setting up your bills to come out is also really important if you have any symptoms of anything that might lead to a lot of forgetfulness or lack of motivation.
Yeah. Well, you're getting to the second part of the question here, but reducing the decision-making burden, do I spend on this or spend on that? That burden can be reduced when your bills are automated. They're paid and you're left, your discretionary spending is a much smaller piece of the metaphorical pie. I learned this in the food world, talking to a dietitian about having the exact same breakfast every single morning. So I didn't have to make any choices. I already chose for the rest of my life, man, the same breakfast. And it has made a very big difference for me in saving my decision-making fuel for things that really do require thought. And breakfast is not one of them for me.
I love that for you. And that is so important because it works for you. Someone else might be like, same breakfast every day. That yeah. will literally
not doing that.
Send me somewhere else. So I think that's like a really good point, though, when it comes to outsourcing. Some things work better for other people. Like I've had to actually put it in my calendar. Tomorrow, this bill is coming out, so that I don't have that feeling when I open my bank account, like, oh gosh, another one gone bites the dust. I just find that it helps me. And that's what makes me happy. That might not mean like anything for someone else, but it does make me feel better about my finances. And that's what financial wellness is about. Being able to make decisions for yourself that will make your management plan sustainable and makes sense for you. There's not always a perfect solution. It will take some time, but I'd say just take one decision at a time and focus on progress and not perfection.
There are many ways one can dimensionalize mental health. And one of them is that there's an underlying condition that could be with someone for their entire life, diagnosed early and with them for their entire life. And then there are other mental health challenges that can be triggered over time with an incident that happens, a particularly stressful time of life, a job loss, a divorce, those sorts of things. For mm-hmm. that second very broad category, what are the ways that people can reduce the severity of the triggers that they may face in life?
I'd say that's a really, really good point you bring up, because I think this information is still valid for anybody at any point in their financial journey. Mm. Because one thing we all have in common is we all have mental health. So you might have a day where you feel like I'm having a bad mental health day, or it might be something that you have struggled with for a very long time. But I'd say you need to get to know the feelings and the emotions that you have around money, no matter who you are. This way you'll spot the patterns in your behavior and you can feel more confident over time. So like I said, I know that when I am super stressed, the first thing that I want to do is shop. That just makes me feel better. I love some retail therapy.
Yeah.
And so I know that I have to put safeguards in place. For example, my credit card limit at the moment is a lot lower than I would say I see out there, because I know that I cannot handle that much credit at this point in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so even if I am getting those emails every month, like, you can increase your credit limit, I know that I will not be able to manage that, especially when my mental health is in poor condition. So but I knew that because I got to know myself. I even had a journal where I wrote down my feelings around money every day for a couple of months. And I just noticed that pattern that when I was stressed, my first thought was to go online shopping. So it also looks like unsubscribing from emails, which show you that there's a sale every single day. Trust me, you're not missing anything. Because if you really needed that item, you will find a sale at another time. Mm. So I think, like I said, it's definitely mostly about managing your own emotions that you have around money. And so if you also know that you are lacking motivation or you need extra support, it's also good to, like I said, involve people in your plan, find someone you trust, or find a mental health professional that you can talk to about what you're feeling. And even if there's a support group online, there's some groups on Facebook, there's some Instagram pages if you prefer social media, where people are actually talking about their money wins, their money challenges in the comment section. Feel free to use the internet with money problems as well.
So many great, great ideas. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for being here. Zendile Chuanza is our guest. She is a personal finance journalist, financial wellness educator. I feel like I have to re-listen to that interview because she had so many great ideas, including journaling. I love that idea. That is our show for today. A thank you to our sponsors, Credit Canada, first and longest standing nonprofit credit counseling agency in the country. For a way to get a hold of us for any reason, questions, comments, story ideas, anything you want. Ask at moolala.ca is our email address. Ask at moolala.ca. Subscribe to our newsletter at moolala.ca. Subscribe to the podcast on any of the podcast platforms. Leave us a review there. That'd be great too. And on social media, Bruce Sellery, Twitter, at Bruce Sellery on Twitter, S-E-L-L-E-R-Y, Bruce Sellery Moolala on Facebook. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.